ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। So first of all, I would like to welcome all our distinguished guests and devotees for today's presentation. So we are going to discuss on this very interesting subject, existence of God. As I have discussed in previous Prerana festivals, that when it comes to understanding of God, especially in India, we have such a fantastic history, a heritage of belief and worship of God, that it is practically impossible to stay in this land of India and miss God. And I was describing in my lecture on Mera Bharat Mahan that practically speaking, if you go through the telephone dictionary, you will find so many names of Krishna, Rama, combination of two, and various other kinds of names, which indicates that the heritage and the culture connected closely with God consciousness has been extant for a long time. And I was also giving the example that right next to our temple, there is a beer bar, Sudama Palace. So even if you want to drink and smoke, you will find Ganesh Bidi. So somehow this land is just filled with a whole lot of all kinds of connection with God. And therefore, it is my experience so far that it is extremely difficult to find a true bona fide atheist in India. A bona fide atheist is difficult to find. One who is within the deepest core of his heart convinced that there is no God. Even communists in West Bengal who have been ruling for the last 30 years, you know, during Durga Puja they go offer aarti privately. Because the culture is so strong, it is so deep rooted, you can't avoid it. Therefore, the biggest difficulty is for the Indian youth especially, since today's program is targeted primarily for such an audience, that on one hand you hear about all kinds of information of God from scriptures, from all kinds of books like Gita, Bhagavatam, and your parents must have told you, your grandmother must have told you, so many things. But on the other hand, we are brought up in an education system which does not give any emphasis or any information about knowledge of God. So you grew up, and in childhood you are taught various kinds of rituals, various kinds of mantras. You are taught to go to temples, you know, and ring the bell, offer aarti, offer obeisances. Practically, everyone has this culture in India. How many of you here throughout your life have visited some kind of temple and prayed to some kind of God and chanted some kind of mantra? Raise your hands. Wow. I think we should have had a different topic. But the point is, although you have some understanding, but still the faith is fragile. And it is not so strong as to percolate into actual practice in one's daily life. And therefore there are lots of confusions, various kinds of contradictions which you find. And so, ultimately we find that the Indian youth is thoroughly confused, unable to understand what is the reality, and is lost in the spiritual supermarket. So I tell this story, it's like one of my first stories I used to tell in college programs, about a village where the villagers organized a satsang program, and there was a sadhu who was staying outside the village. So the villagers organized a nice program. The whole village assembled. They went to the sadhu, invited him. He came all the way from outside of the village, sat on his asana. And after he sat down, the first question he asked was, how many of you here believe in God? So the whole village who had assembled, they were all very simple people. They all raised their hands. So the sadhu said, I have come here to convince you about the existence of God. But you already believe in God. So what is the point? I am going away. He got up and walked off. So now you know, it is so difficult to organize a program. Just for organizing one prerna, we have to print passes, make publicity, make announcements, call up people, and then you have a few hundred students coming together. And after making such elaborate arrangement, if the speaker just shows up and then just says goodbye and walks off, it is so difficult. So the villagers were bewildered. They didn't know what to do. So they went to the sadhu again and said, we'll organize one more program, but please, this time, please cooperate with us. Please don't ask that question. So he came again, and again he sat down. And again, before beginning, he said, last time I asked one question, I hope there is some change now. How many of you believe in God? And the organizers are looking at all the audience. And everyone put their hands down. I said, God? Who's he? Never heard of him. And the sadhu said, I have come all the way here to speak about God, and none of you are interested to hear about God. Why should I speak? I am going away. So the third time he was invited. And this time the villagers were trained what to do. So the third time he asked the question, those seated on the right side, they all raised their hands saying, yes, we believe in God. And there were others on the left side, they put on their hands down, said, no, we don't believe in God. And now the organizers felt, he's trapped now. He has to speak. So the sadhu said, okay, those sitting on the right who believe in God, speak to those on the left not believing in God. Settle the matter amongst yourself. So I tell this story to illustrate the condition of people in India. They have faith, but very fragile faith, which can be changed, broken down, molded by the media, by the surroundings, by other relatives, according to the situation. And I have seen so many young boys brought up in a religious environment, and they come to colleges, join the hostels, and there they go through a complete transformation. Not towards God. Totally animalistic. They are coming from nice backgrounds, have a spiritual culture, but because they have not been logically convinced that yes, there is an existence of a higher power. So therefore they lack the intellectual ability to defend their faith. And therefore they are exposed to attacks on that faith and they succumb to that attack. And I have seen nice innocent boys coming. And in the first year in hostels, you know, they are subjected to ragging. So a group of, you know, 8 or 10 people will surround and say, cigarette pita hai kya? He said, nahin. Cigarette pita hai kya? Nahin. Pita hai kya? Nahin. 10 people ask him. So he thinks maybe something is wrong with me only. And I don't smoke. And finally, he is brainwashed into believing that what the others are doing is true, so I should also do that. Right? And therefore, gradually because of the environment, he's forced. And he doesn't have sufficient faith to defend himself. Although deep within the heart he knows what my mother taught me, what my grandmother taught me, what my father explained to me in my childhood is true. There is some truth to it. But somehow, I don't hear any of this in any of my textbooks in school, in college, and everyone else is doing everything else. Right? So I remember one of my classmates was in IIT, was a very staunch follower. He not only believed in God, but he was also practicing. Right? And he was considered strange when he entered the house, even in spite of the ragging session. He went through the ragging session, and the guys would surround him and subject him to all kinds of questions. But his faith was so strong that these other raggers would get bewildered. And they would just leave him because they felt if they continued longer, they will start believing in God. He was really staunch. And typically they would ask him about all kinds of sense gratification. And then one senior asked him, "So what is your experience? What do you see when you see a beautiful woman?" And everyone was thinking, now he's going to speak the reality. And he said, "Skeleton." And immediately, from that day onwards, he was never ragged again. And so in that first year, we had that Dandiya program in the hostel. So whole group of guys come together for sense gratification. Pure unalloyed sense gratification, nothing else. No other cause. But still, because it is India, the hostel secretary said, before we begin Dandiya, so that everyone's desires is fulfilled, you know, why everyone comes for Dandiya, you know. For the fulfillment of everyone's desires, we should have some puja in the beginning. So if somebody asks, is it scientific? It is to be done. It is good. It is safe. Let us not take any chances. So whom to call? Bola, wo hai na, wo first year ka, thoda usko bulao. Kyon? Shraddha se karega, kyunki usko isme koi ruchi nahi hai. So therefore he was called and he was told, zara puja kar dena. Jyada bada nahi, chota bilkul, ha? 2 minute ka. So he was like, kisko main prarthana karu, jisko bhi, lekin sabka ichha pura hona chahiye, aisa karke chal. So he did the aarti, within 2 minutes he finished. Then the organizer, acha abhi tu na chale ja, you go now. Because they could see that his convictions are strong, he's totally detached, whereas they are here for enjoyment. And therefore this whole concept of a higher power witnessing things and you're accountable for sins which you do is all very difficult for the program of sense gratification. So I give the example that in India, people follow some religion, some dharma, not as the main meal. Just like when you have a full plate prasad, right? You have the main meal, rice, dal, sabji, this, that. But also along with that, they serve you some lemon, nimbu, on the side, you know. So then on the main meal, you sprinkle some nimbu on top, little bit. Just to give the flavor, to enhance the flavor. So like that, the main meal is that of Indra Tripti, sense gratification. And then little religion on top like nimbu. Kyon? Taste badhta hai. To enhance the taste of sense gratification. So that we are not like socially seen as totally, you know, demoniac. But there is some kind of an adjustment. So here, I have tried to compile a few arguments about the existence of God from different sources published by devotees and ISKCON and scientists and stuff like that. And it is not comprehensive and we won't be able to go into great detail, but it is just like an exploratory exercise. And for those who are really interested in this subject to understand the existence very scientifically, I can suggest many books, resource material, websites where you could go into great detail in this subject matter. So to go into great detail into the scientific explanation of the existence of God is not relevant because most people's understanding of science is very superficial. So to explain how God exists scientifically, first we have to take a whole year classes on science only. Therefore it is very difficult. And so, like I attended the conference on science and religion in 1997 in Calcutta. World conference on synthesis of science and religion. And I was taken there because I'm from IIT and they said, okay, you'll understand something, what they are saying, and you can preach to the scientists during prasad and, you know, stuff like that. So I went there, but when they start explaining things scientifically, using quantum mechanics, using mathematics, using this, that, everything goes right above. And one sannyasi was there sitting with me and he came out and he said, my God, what presentations. I mean, I'm not able to understand anything. What about you? You are from IIT, maybe you are understanding. So I said, I understand a little bit, but sometimes I go to sleep. Because it's a nice AC hall, everything is dark, it is very conducive. So then he said, you are better off, you are going to sleep only sometimes. For me, I am sometimes getting up. Because it is so heavy. So therefore, if you start giving presentations on how God exists from quantum mechanics principle, from this principle, that principle, first you have to explain the basics of the subject properly. And therefore that will take several years of study. And therefore, the typical mentality in India for students is, they are not so much concerned with understanding the subject deeply. Mostly I have seen, very few people are going to school and college to understand that, I want to understand physics. I want to understand how the apple falls. No, I want to understand how can I eat the best apple. Whatever will help me get money so that I can buy apples in future, let me do that. So for Indian student, the axiom one, first sutra, Vedanta sutra, for the Indian student is passing exam. If I am able to pass exam, somehow or the other, then as soon as the exam is over, the books are given a decent burial. And you say, okay, no more. Because you feel that is now no longer relevant. How many people you have met who are really studying in your school, in your college, to understand the subject, to understand how the wind is moving, to understand how the planets are moving, how physical forces are interacting? Very few. It is typically a superficial understanding. And therefore, it is very difficult to explain deep scientific concepts because the general understanding is not so deep. And personally speaking also, I learned more about science after coming to Hare Krishna by reading these books of Sadaput Prabhu, Druta Karma Prabhu and other material of Bhaktivedanta Institute, which is so wonderful. So all credit must go to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada, who went to the West in 1965 and unleashed an onslaught on this entire system of mechanistic, reductionistic, atheistic, scientific worldview. And Prabhupada said, I'm challenging all of the existing conceptions based on firm conviction on realization of God consciousness. Therefore, what Srila Prabhupada did, it was quite extraordinary because very few people till then had taken on the might of the scientific community in this manner from the Gaudiya Vaishnava perspective. So let us go into these arguments. So what I have done is today, in today's presentation, I have compiled 8 arguments. And we can go through these arguments one by one, and then you can see how these arguments can help you understand and solidify your faith. First is argument from numbers. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. So, argument from numbers means that just consider the overwhelming numbers of the literature, the number of words, the number of people throughout history who have had faith in the conception of God. From the beginning, from time immemorial, if you consider, consider the number of literatures available, number of books written, the details of the descriptions across all kinds of different cultures, the different forms of religion which exist. So therefore, if so much of literature, so much of details, such information, such precision is available, and so many people throughout history have given up all kinds of prospects for material aggrandizement simply to dedicate themselves to surrender to God, worship Him and spread His glories, there could be something in this concept. You can't just neglect this concept, dismiss it without giving it a try. If you don't want to take to it, that's a different thing. But you can't shoot it down without you go through the whole range of arguments available. So you see that some of the greatest personality in history who have been worshipped have been men of God. So if you consider a rock concert, right? One of the most famous group was the Beatles. And in between 64 to 68, they were so phenomenally famous all over the world. There is a book called Here Comes the Sun on George Harrison's life by one of our Prabhupada disciples. It's a very beautiful book. And in that I was reading that when the Beatles would perform, there would be a fleet of ambulance waiting outside. Because when simply people would see the Beatles, they would faint. That was the kind of impact they had on people's minds. Jai Shri Srinatha Gopinath Ji ki, Sunitai Gaurachandra ki, Sri Girdhari Gopal ki, Shilata Vishakha Devi ki. So incidentally, tomorrow morning, Radha Gopinath, we are going to have a special darshan. We are going to have some kind of a flower dress. So that's going to be a special darshan at 7:30 tomorrow. And also in the evening, starting from 3 p.m., we are going to have, from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m., we are going to have Radha Gopinath. We have the deities, Radha Krishna deities, who will be in the garden below. And they will be decorated in wonderful flowers and in the middle of that fountain with kirtans. So you will enjoy this festival tomorrow. So incidentally, now, if you consider that the Beatles were so famous, and George Harrison, on his 21st birthday, he was so famous by then, that on his 21st birthday, he got 10 lakh greeting cards wishing him. And there were 7 trucks of greeting cards in front of his home lined up. Can you imagine what kind of fame, what kind of worship? So people have a tendency to worship. You can't say no, but only the object has changed. And the Beatles stayed at a hotel in Seattle. And when I was at Seattle, they were telling me this story, that when the Beatles stayed in that hotel, the manager of the hotel realized the potential. And so the towels which were used by the Beatle, he cut it up into 1 cm by 1 cm squares. And he auctioned that for $1,000 each. And he made $1 million out of that. Simply by the sale of the small towel pieces, Mahaprasad. It is in one sense remnants. So you can see that all over the world, the demand is there to get objects, articles, or anything related with a worshipable personality. You can't avoid that. Therefore, if in a concert, typically there would be 1 lakh, 1.5 lakh, 2 lakh people, Which is the biggest stadium in the world and how much can you hold? But you have one Kumbh Mela. In one Kumbh Mela on one day when there is Snan day in Sangam, 1 to 3 crore people come. Just for taking bath. And Prabhupada says, so in that way also you can see, even in terms of numbers, you know, you will find more in any congregation where the object is God. So why so many people are coming? How they are coming? Jagannath Rath Yatra, which all of us are going in June. One day before Rath Yatra, Jagannath Puri empty. I mean, not so many people. The same population. Morning of the Rath Yatra, 10 to 15 lakh people. And it is not that all over Orissa, they are, you know, making advertisement, billboards all over Orissa. Jagannath is coming, Jagannath is coming, Jagannath is coming, you come. No posters, no advertisement, no billboards, nothing. But on the day, you will have 10 to 15 lakhs. Next day morning, no one there again. Everyone comes for that day, pulls Jagannath ji and goes. So that indicates there must be something. When the British were ruling over India, they were so bewildered by the Jagannath Rath Yatra. They brought their best scholars to try to understand. Hey, who are these three people? That even when our Lord gives any big lecture, so many people don't come. These three wooden pieces come on chariot and people are coming like crazy, jumping, you know, pulling them, going wild. Who are they? So they wrote so many articles trying to demolish the conception of Jagannath. But in spite of all their efforts, Jagannath remained a mystery. So the Britishers couldn't stop Jagannath Rath Yatra in Puri. Rath Yatra started in London. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada the key! Therefore, you cannot beat such numbers. All I am saying is, just think. If so many people, from time immemorial, have been going crazy about God, and have been giving up everything, including the greatest, most powerful pleasure of sex, just so that they can worship and please God, all of them can't be nuts. All of them couldn't be crazy. There must be, there could be, some principle which is inspiring. Okay, go ahead. Let us have some quotes by... Yeah? Go ahead. Keep going. So we have some quotes by scientists because they are the current Mahajans. You know? Everyone respects them. And if say, thus said Albert Einstein. Said, oh, then it must be true. If Einstein has said it, it must be true. Say, so says Ramanujacharya. Who knows? Who is he? Right. So therefore, we have simply shifted our faith in the Acharyas and the great souls and transferred that faith to scientists. Most of whom we have never seen, never met. Right? And we simply have seen excerpts of their works in our textbooks, which was in our course. And we were forced to read it and forced to write it in our exam. So that was our only connection. But because it is socially acceptable, so we say, okay, because scientists are saying. So this is one such scientist's realization. For the scientist who has lived by his faith in the power of reason, the story of the Big Bang ends like a bad dream. For the past 300 years, scientists have scaled the mountain of ignorance. And as they pull themselves over the final rock, they are greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries. This is one of the professors of Columbia University and founder and director of Goddard Space Center. Next, the exquisite order displayed by our scientific understanding of the physical world calls for the divine. So this one is from MIT, place of pilgrimage for engineers, right? The Mecca for IITians. Beyond IIT is MIT. So therefore, he says this, We know that nature is described by the best of all possible mathematics because God created it. So here is a Soviet mathematician. And now we have Einstein. Go ahead. Only two things are infinite: the universe and human stupidity. And I am not sure about the former. That means he is sure about the latter. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. Next. When I began my career as a cosmologist some 20 years ago, I was a convinced atheist. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that one day I would be writing a book purporting to show that the central claims of Judeo-Christian theology are in fact true, that these claims are straightforward deductions of the laws of physics as we now understand them. I have been forced into these conclusions by the inexorable logic of my own special branch of physics. This is Frank Taylor. Frank Tipler, professor of mathematical physics. So even if you don't understand everything about what he says, no problem. The main thing is he believes in God. That's what we are trying to say. Because in Kali Yuga, bombastic words are considered cool. And as soon as you hear bombastic words, you can't understand. You are bewildered within. You think, very interesting. Very interesting. There must be something deep into this. How was the lecture? Deep. What did you understand? Nothing. Why? Because I was in deep sleep. Therefore it was deep. So it's not telling false, you know. It's telling the truth. So therefore, argument from nature. Second argument. First is order. So these are different arguments from nature. I have four arguments from nature. So first is order. So the spelling is wrong. It is not a casual universe. It is a causal universe. A causal is one word. A-C-A-U-S-A-L. So if you just change letters a little bit, whole meaning changes. So this is a printing mistake. So it's a causal. What does a causal mean? A causal means that before, like for example, you come back after the Prerna festival back to your home, and then you see that in your bedroom the air condition is on, the bed has been nicely set up, the mosquito net has been set up, you know, a nice hot glass of milk has been kept, just the right temperature considering what time you will come in, and the light has been dimmed. So as soon as you enter, everything seems perfect, right? Now, do you think it has happened automatically? No. Someone at your home who loves you and who feels that, okay, he'll be coming back tired, I should make this arrangement. So that is known as a causal arrangement. That means something is pre-arranged, predicting that some event is going to happen in the near future. Like that. So, to understand this comes the next principle, which is known as the anthropic principle. That if you consider this world which has come into existence, then you see everything which is present here, it has been designed in a certain way to facilitate our stay here. Just the right temperature, just the right conditions, just the right kind of environment. Just like if you take a dice, right, which has six sides. So we're going to deal with the dice example again once more. And if you just throw the dice once, the number six comes. You take it again, number six comes. Again, number six comes. You throw the dice 10,000 times, number six only comes. And you will say that, wow, it is a fantastic probability. But within your mind you will think, maybe this dice is rigged. Maybe the dice has been manipulated. and maybe from all the sides, it is six only. And you actually verify, and you will understand, oh, on all sides it is six. Otherwise, I was thinking I have become incarnation of Shakuni. So therefore, it is rigged. On all sides it is six. Therefore, if you consider that, oh, let us check how is the situation of the planet Earth. Okay, go ahead. How is the Earth as far as suitability for life is concerned? Then you will see that the Earth has all the principles and all the conditions which are just right for survival. In all ways. And we don't have time to go into the details of this. But you are sitting here peacefully. Right? What do you see on top? You see the fan? What is it doing? Fan is moving, rotating. You see that? Now, what about the earth? Is it rotating? How many say yes? Raise your hands. Many are keeping their hands down. So how many feel earth is not rotating? Nobody. But do you see it? Do you feel it? No. The whole earth is like a sphere and we are on top of it and actually speaking at all different angles. So there is no fear that tomorrow when I walk, maybe I'll just fall off and something will happen like that. So the earth is moving around at the speed of 64,000 miles per hour. But do you feel that? When sitting, do you have to put seat belt? After sitting for class, fasten your seat belt. Otherwise, when the earth rotates and shakes, you'll just fall off. No. That is the last anxiety for you right now, is it not? You may have anxiety of exam, you know, nokri, job, girlfriend, or marriage, or this or that, how to please the society. So many other anxieties may be there. But how many of you have any anxiety that if suddenly the speed of the earth increases, kya hoga mera? Huh? Abhi tak to theek chal raha hai. Lekin 4 saal ke baad, jab ghumega, tab main kya karunga? So far, in 12 years of preaching, nobody has ever asked me that question. People have asked all kinds of questions. It makes your head move. But never this question. Right? So it is moving at full speed, but still we are peaceful. Kaisa hai life? Maja hai. Sab thik. Koi problem nahi. So that is the last thing in our mind. Okay, go ahead. Consider the water. You have ocean filled with salt water. And because the salt is there, the water doesn't evaporate. It maintains proper temperature. And the density of ice is lower. So the ice goes on top and the water remains liquid below. You know, so many nice facilities. And then the salt water goes up and it creates clouds. Now so many of you are mechanical engineers. How many mechanical engineers here are studying mechanical engineering? So, if I give you the project, design an aircraft proof machine, which is mobile. An aircraft proof mobile water tank made of materials what? Water vapor and dust and some air. That is your ingredients. Make it. How many will be able to make? Something out of vapor. So here you have a cloud which is moving. And then when an aircraft passes through it, the pilot while maneuvering the airplane doesn't have to worry about clouds. He doesn't say, oh, cloud has come, go down. As soon as he sees clouds, there is no change. So he can just pass through the clouds peacefully. And it has tons of water. But when that tons of water falls on the earth, you know what happened in Bombay last year, right? Bombay became Venice. And it became flooded. And the whole city stopped. But when it's in the air, nothing happens. So you have sun. And it is said that 5 by 100 million part of the sun's energy falls on planet Earth. So I have taken this resource from Radhesham Prabhu's book, Discover Yourself, and that's available in our stall. And also some articles by Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, who writes some nice articles on from IYF Pune. We have some devotees from IYF Pune today here. So, this is a very, very interesting statistics. And it is said that whatever energy falls on the earth from the sun rays, it is greater than 10,000 times all the energy, or 1 lakh times all the energy which has ever been consumed. And therefore, 1 kilowatt, the sun's rays which fall on the earth for 1 second, it can burn a 1 kilowatt electric fire for 10,000 million years. Like that. So sufficient to bewilder all of you. So therefore it shows that, okay, here is a super, you know, organized, orderly machine state. That means exact distance from the earth, if it goes away, you'll freeze. If it comes close, you'll burn. So there is order maintained. Therefore, it is an anthropic principle that whatever conditions you need exactly to fulfill your desires are there. Okay, next is air. So, there is a concept called, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu writes this article on symbiotic factory. Symbiotic factory means there is factory A and there is factory B. The waste product of factory A becomes raw material of factory B, and the waste product of factory B becomes raw material for factory A. So if you have such a system, you can become a millionaire pretty soon. Right? But this is just a dream of so many scientists. But it is practically impossible to have any industry like this. But what do we find all around us, following the principles of how things have been organized perfectly for us within this world? We have human beings whose raw material to survive is oxygen. And the waste product is carbon dioxide. So, if we are going on using oxygen, then the oxygen supplies will be finished and you need to replenish it. So therefore, exactly to replenish the oxygen and to take care of all the carbon dioxide which has been released, what do we have? Trees and plants. For them, the raw material is carbon dioxide and their waste is oxygen. And you say, yeah, one more example of how, you know, when I threw the dice, exactly 6 came. So therefore, this is all indication that someone has worked on conditions before the person arrives in the room. The room has been designed, has been ordered, all conditions have been set. This is an example of a causal principle, or what is known as anthropic principle, that which is conducive for human beings to survive, for all living beings to survive and exist. Go ahead, next. Second is argument based on design. So His Grace Shikshashtak Prabhu gave me a list of statistics from various design parameters of species of life. So we have the example of a giraffe. Right, so this is like kind of very interesting. The giraffe is so huge, its heart weighs 11 kilos. Because it has to pump so much of blood all the way up. You know, can you imagine? Giraffe is so long, so huge. whenever you stay in a flat system, 3-4 flats, one of the first requirements is a pump, a water pump, to pump all the water up. Right? And therefore, one of the biggest problems of people in top floor is those from below may sometimes suction more. And so the giraffe never, you know, his head never spins because the blood doesn't come there. And he's wondering, sab idhar hi atak gaya niche. Are kuch upar aa hi nahi raha, kya baat hai? So you never see giraffe doing shirshasan, trying to enhance blood supply in his head. So you have such a powerful mechanism, although the height is so much, so perfectly designed. So therefore, the second example is that of bats. And one of the characteristics, interesting feature of bats is, bats can sleep upside down. They can hang somewhere, sleep upside down, peacefully, without any problem. And their pelvic girdle can rotate 180 degree. Like if someone calls me from behind, my knees are like this only, but upper part of my body changes. If that happens, you'll all run away. You'll think, Atma. And when the bat is put in a wired room, he's giving me this interesting information, how they have something called an echolocator. You know, sophisticated technology. They throw some vibrations and they retrace it and they understand exactly how the path is. Although it is dark, it's a completely dark room, but they sense things so efficiently. So you have a whole room filled with wires going crisscross. Dark room, wires all over the place. And several bats inside. And the challenge is, they have to fly without hitting against each other and without touching even one of those wires. Now the problem is, they are sending vibrations. And if 15 bats are there, all their vibrations are going. And they are receiving. So there is chance that he will pick up someone else's vibration. And then he will get, you know, there will be a detour in his path. But the interesting thing is, they are so unique, they pick up only their own echoes. And they are so sensitive and finely tuned, they don't even touch a single, you know, thread, wire, and they can move through. Such precision, such technology. And so, there is something known as a tiger moth, an insect. And what the tiger moth does is, it sends vibrations, and through the vibrations, the tiger moth jams the radar of this, you know, bat. The vibrations of the tiger moth destroys the vibrations of the echo of this bat. So when the tiger moth is around, the bat loses control. So therefore, US Air Force has kept many such tiger moths for research to test how we can understand the technology from the tiger moth so that we can make this stealth bomber which will defy all of these other, you know, vibrations and radar to detect this. So an insect is subject matter of great study because of its design. There is one more interesting bird called ruby-throated hummingbird. It weighs just 3 grams. And it flies 1,000 miles twice a year over the Gulf of Mexico from North to South America. And the wing which it has, it is so tiny, it flaps 75 times every second. It is so fast. But it can fly non-stop for hours together. And it makes the journey all across and it comes back every year. So now the scientists, they kept this bird and were doing a research. And in the research, they tried to figure out what exactly is this bird doing. And they found out the body weight was so small, and according to their calculations and their equations, according to the level of energy which this bird will produce, this bird can never make the journey of that distance. That is the conclusion according to scientific data. But the bird doesn't care anything for the conclusion. It is still continuing its flight. And the person is getting awards for making these, you know, kind of reports. So there is a reality, but according to known parameters of science, we just cannot correlate those things. So therefore, this is a very interesting principle. So the camel, it can live without drinking water for 8 days. In a few days, Nirjal Ekadashi is coming. And it is a matter of meditation for several days. 8 days can stay without water, and when it breaks its fast, 130 liters at one shot. You know? And therefore, to adjust to the desert conditions, it has translucent eyelids, so that when the dust storms attack, it is not affected. And the spider, it seems, has 5 times, you know, the stronger wire which it makes, web, than even steel. That is the kind of web which it makes. So powerful. So in this way, this is an example of the second principle of design. Third is organization. And I have the example again from the book Discover Yourself of seed of a sequoia tree. It is 3,000 feet high, it has a 36 feet dia, and it has sufficient wood to make 56 room houses, and it has a 2 feet bark, and it survived for 3,000 years. And it has a seed which is equivalent to the head tip of a needle. That is how tiny and insignificant that is. And then the next principle is that of a bee, such organization, that so many bees together, but everything is well managed, well organized, about who will do what kind of function. There is a queen bee, everyone takes shelter and follows the principles properly. Then fourth is laws. There are perfect laws which have been made. The first is law of gravity. As soon as you throw something on top, it falls down to the bottom. It is a law. There is no doubt what will happen. Right? Never you have even an iota of a doubt that if I throw this towards you, where it will go. I can't say that, oh, I thought it is going to fly. That's why I took the chance. Sorry. No, you can't do that. Because everyone knows, as soon as you throw an object, it goes down. You can't avoid it. That's a law. Second is law of electromagnetism. And you have very specific principles on how magnetism and forces of attraction work. Third is seasons. They come by regular intervals and they change. And we know, we can predict that this is what the seasonal changes will be. So we have started putting monsoon shed, if you notice. All kinds of poles are being erected so that we are ready for the monsoon. How are we so sure? Do we get call every year on this time, you know, you're going to get? No. And it is not that every time it changes. It is not that in January suddenly it becomes rainy season. For 2007, Jan to March, rainy season. And summer will be, you know, November and December. No. It is predictable. How? There are some laws governing it. Right? And even though there are such laws, still we have the fourth example, movement of planets. The planets are moving. And all the planets are moving, and there are so many of these stellar objects, but none of them are colliding with each other or hitting each other. They are moving in their right places. What is keeping them in their orbits? Right? You never have that anxiety that as the earth is moving, we are going to hit against, you know, someone. When you are driving in a car, you are always in anxiety. Driver chalayega kya barobar? you know. But here, you don't have anxiety. Who's driving Earth? What will happen? What will happen if it hits something? Will there be a traffic jam? No. The path is well defined. It continues perfectly. Like when I was in London, they have what is known as congestion charge. So they have a whole system of program of how the London city is divided into different areas where they try to discourage people to go in certain areas. So if you go into that lane, you'll have to pay a charge extra. And if you don't pay that charge, it will double next day and it will go on doubling like that. So they had to make the program for the whole of London. They have cameras which will map, which will catch your number plate and this and that. But they couldn't figure out exactly how to do it. How to make this whole system, software, for, you know, applying this congestion charge. So finally, the whole program was made by a software engineer from Bombay. Why? Because he was used to congestion. He said, no problem, congestion, that's what I've been seeing all life. So he used that experience and he created a whole system by which the whole of traffic in London could be properly monitored. So even if you have to monitor and control traffic, it needs so much of brain. Therefore, if so many laws exist, do you think it can be just like that? So these are just two examples and two arguments from a list of arguments which I have. So what I'll do at this stage is I'll stop. It's 8:35 and we can take some questions. Any questions? Yeah.
Life.
Hare Krishna. What is life?
We breathe, we drink, we sleep, but why?
Okay, go ahead. It was the next point which he has asked pertinent question. So the third argument is argument from purpose. So there are four requirements for creating anything. It's a very interesting concept. Go ahead. Four things imperative while creating. First is, you must know the purpose, what you want to do with it, right? Anything you want to create, you must have these four things. Otherwise, it is not possible to create. So, suppose this. I want to create this. What is this? A clip. It is made of plastic and also some metal. It was assembled in a factory by people. Right? But what is the most important thing as far as this clip is concerned? Before it is made, before it is conceived. Now this clip is there. Now can I use it for putting it around my ear? So that can also be used. But it is not what it is meant for. Right? Nor it is meant for audience to put it on my mouth. If you are feeling hungry. It could be used. But that's not its purpose. It has a specific purpose of keeping all the papers together. So with that purpose, then you go to the next stage, which is design. You design. So unless the purpose is known, you can't create a design. Is it not? If you call an architect and say that, make a building. So first question he will ask is, for what? Aise hi banao. Lekin kis liye? Banao. Baad mein dekhenge. Because if you need a car garage, you can't use it as a bedroom. Right? And if you are designing a toilet, you can't be using that for relaxation. It may be the most sophisticated, well-equipped toilet. But still, there is no one you can say that 3 hours he spends there, you know, relaxing. No. That purpose is different. If you are making a temple, the design will be different. If you are having a workshop, the design will be different. If you are having an assembly line, first thing is purpose. Think of anything, even a small pin, which is created, which is bought in the market. Is that pin just scrap which has come out of some lathe machine? No, it is designed with a specific purpose. If you are walking on the road and suddenly something pierces your leg and you take it out, it's a drawing pin or it's a small, you know, kind of a pin. So you don't think that this has been created to destroy me. Mujhe marne ke liye banaya hai. No, it has been created for some other purpose, but by mistake it is lying there. So even a small pin is designed with some specific purpose in mind. You cannot tell me example of anything which is just created without keeping the purpose. So the third thing is, then you have raw material. And when you have raw material, then the construction crew comes in. These are the four very important requirements for creating anything. So therefore, Prabhupada was asked this question. So now you see that this gigantic machine is existing. This world, is it not? So, somebody may be coming from village and is seeing this LCD projector first time and doesn't know what it is. Or maybe somebody has nothing to do with music, you know, and he just sees this harmonium. And if a coolie comes and he thinks it's a box to lift, and someone comes and thinks, okay, this is a nice thing to store water. There are nice, you know, holes here. You can pour water and you can store it here. And I was giving the example that somebody always used to washing clothes in bucket, and he gets a washing machine, and he doesn't get a manual along with the washing machine. So what difference it makes? He takes the washing machine with his hand, makes the soap solution, puts the clothes inside, takes it out from inside, and again washing outside only. And people ask him, washing machine kaisa hai? Achcha hai, bada hai thoda. Balti chota tha, thoda bada balti. Theek hai. Safed hai. Bahut sara button bhi hai usme. Use karte ho? Nahi, nahi, wo hai aisa. So, what difference has it made? Now the machine is there, but you are simply using it to wash your clothes manually only. So therefore you should know, if that washing machine is existing, there must be some purpose. Otherwise why it will exist? Is it not? So many times you may come across objects, especially if you are going for shopping somewhere, and you see suddenly some machine, some kind of gadget, something. First question which comes in your mind is, kiske liye banaya hai? For why this has been created? That is the first thing which comes in the mind. So therefore, such a sophisticated machine is existing all around us, this entire material universe, with our bodies. Our bodies are such sophisticated systems. But not once do we ask this question, what is the purpose? So if machines exist, if something is created, then there must be a purpose behind it. Only then the design is made. Otherwise, you cannot show me a single created thing which has been brought into existence without keeping the purpose in mind. So the example is a small child. He likes laddu. He likes peda. So he eats it. And whatever he gets, he eats it. So you bring a clock, right, and show it to that small child, 1 year old child. What will that child do with the clock? Pick it up, try to lick it, bite it, chew it. Nothing happens, throws it away. Child interprets, useless. If he has the ability to communicate, if he has the ability to publish paper, his paper which will be published will have the title, Clocks Are Useless. Research conclusion, clocks are not edible. Right? That is his research paper. Based on his experiment. What? Clocks are not edible. That is true. But still the child cannot publish a paper on what is the purpose of clock. Because he is still a child. And he has no conception of time. Because it is for the parents to keep awake when he is awake. Otherwise he has no responsibility of sleeping at a certain time and get up at a certain time. He will sleep all day and exactly at 10 p.m. become fresh, ready for the night shift. And he'll keep screaming all night and the poor parents have to stay awake just taking care of that child. So naturally the clock is the most irrelevant thing for that child. You know, you never see parents for a small baby putting some alarm. Isko uthana padega. No, he is royal, like a king. When he wants, he sleeps. All he has to do, that is it. And all whatever pleasures have to be supplied will be supplied. So therefore, from the child's point of view, he can't see what is the purpose of this clock. And even if you make a whole presentation on the history of timepiece, history of clocks, different types of clocks existing all over the world, and this and that, Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Ji ki. Right. Even if you have a 7-day seminar on explaining scientifically the whole purpose and the design of clock, is it possible for that child to comprehend what the clock is? Okay. Why I am making this point? That before even you ask what is the purpose of creation, my question is, we require a certain minimum maturity to appreciate the purpose for which certain things have been created. Just that something exists and just that the manufacturer has attached a certain purpose for that product is not automatically a guarantee that everyone, everywhere will be able to understand the relevance of that product. Therefore, before you challenge and before you question what is the purpose of this machine, first question is that am I ready to be understand what exactly is that purpose. Because you can go on communicating to that child, but because his maturity level is childish, even though so much of effort goes, he can't connect logically all those things. Therefore, my dear friends, each one of us is adult here physically, but consciousness-wise, spiritually, from different lifetimes we have carried with different conceptions. So the naked truth is, each one of us is at a different level within as far as consciousness and maturity level and ability to comprehend philosophical concepts is concerned. Therefore, external adulthood is not an automatic guarantee that from within also you have become mature. And therefore, in spite of the most logical arguments given to that child, nothing makes sense to that child. It is not the problem with the person presenting. It is some patience, some time has to be given for that child to grow up. Therefore, we should understand that as recipients of this knowledge, It is equally our responsibility to analyze and introspect whether I am mature enough to grasp this concept or not. Because philosophical and spiritual subject matters, they are not coming within the realm of the regular empirical scientific processes. Just because you have a degree, just because you have a PhD, doesn't mean that you'll be able to understand anything about spirituality and God. Knowledge of English is not a prerequisite to be able to penetrate into this truth. Sad to say, but true. Therefore, we have to keep aside our misconceptions. We have to keep an open mind and become humble. And then, gradually, over a period of time, as we go through our education system and understand these concepts, we grow up. So the only thing is, people may ask then, why are you holding open lectures for thousands of people? Why don't you just grade things so that people at different levels of maturity can, you know, get different levels of understanding? The problem is, there is no way of detecting who is at what level. Nobody comes with a certificate here. When there is birth, there is no tag that this is a person's level. Therefore, maybe some people are ready, some people are not ready. Whatever it may be, our duty is to throw the seeds. Where the soil is fertile, the seeds will take root. And then the plant of faith and devotion can grow. If the root, if the soil is hard, filled with atheistic, skeptic, and all kinds of other conceptions, not ready, it will take some more time. Some more plowing is required. Therefore, when I describe the concept of purpose, then I can go into a whole, launch a whole seminar on what is the purpose of this creation. But the question to be asked before that is the child ready to understand what is the purpose of the clock? And it is not just something theoretical, but to enter deep into the concept and realize it, assimilate it, internalize it. As they say in Hindi, antrikaran. I'll tell you an example. Albert Einstein was a scientist, and I read this story. He had a driver, and he had presented a series of, you know, scientific presentations in certain places. Albert Einstein. And he would practice his presentation sitting in the back seat of the car, and the driver would be hearing, and he would travel all over Germany making these presentations. And it was the same presentations because it was a very famous thesis which he had brought up. And now the driver had heard this so many times, he had kind of memorized it. So one day, as Albert Einstein was sitting in the back side, he spoke some sentence halfway and then left it. And the driver completed it. So Einstein was bewildered. He said, "Hey, you know this?" He said, "Yeah, of course. I've been hearing every day for so many, you know, months, naturally." So Einstein said, "I'm feeling very tired for this next conference. Can you go? It is a new place. I'm not so famous right now. Nobody knows me. You just go." He said, "Fine." So he went. He took the dress and he went in and took the whole presentation and verbatim repeated it. Dum, 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 dum. There was a big applause. And after the applause, he thought it is over. Then the organizer said, "Now there will be question answer session." And he was bewildered, the driver, because he knew only that much. Then there was a big, powerful, old-looking scientist with glass. He got up. "Sir, what you presented, I have so and so and so and so and so and so." His question went on for so many minutes. And when this question was asked, the driver very gravely nodded. And he said, "Too simple question. It is so simple, even my driver sitting outside can answer this question." So So it is a fact that he had some understanding, but had he internalized it? So therefore, so many people latch on to rhetoric, and then they think that, okay, I got a few concepts called philosophy here, here, there, so many things, and therefore I'm a philosopher. But no, spiritual life is not so cheap. It is not a fashion. It is not that you are here to collect some information to act cool in some cocktail party. We are here to understand what is the goal of life and practice it in our lives and willing to change our lives. Tyago hi purusha vyagra trivida samprakirtita. In 18th chapter of Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, I am going to tell you about this knowledge and renunciation. Because my dear Arjuna, you are tiger amongst men. Purusha vyagra. Why the word vyagra is used? Because it requires a lot of bravery to hear about renunciation, about change, about sacrifice. And therefore, Arjuna was referred to like this. Purusha vyagra. You are brave, Arjun, and therefore you are a qualified person who can hear about the concepts of renunciation. What is true renunciation? Therefore, someone asked Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, why the world was created? And Prabhupada said, for enjoyment. And the man was in ecstasy. Prabhupada added, not yours, Krishna's. So therefore, the creation is there. And people say, okay, if the God is there and He has created this world and life, what is the purpose? There is so much of pain, so much of suffering. Therefore, because suffering is there, God doesn't exist. How many people have fallen sick in life? Raise hands. Okay, good. How many of you here are doctors? Raise hand. Okay. Sickness exists. That means, how can doctors exist? If I give an argument like that, because there is sickness in this world, therefore, doctors don't exist. Right? So therefore, they won't get prasad. Because they don't exist. Can I make a conclusion like that? No. Doesn't make sense. The doctors exist. Sickness also exists. But the doctors have a certain role to play when the sickness is there. Sickness is a means when the people turn to the doctor. So pain is good or bad? How many people say pain is bad? Raise hand. How many say pain is good? Raise hand. Okay. So now let's analyze. If I'm dancing in kirtan, suppose. Now after some time you're going to start kirtan. And the kirtan goes really wild. And then suddenly, I break my foot. Somebody jumps. His ecstasy interferes with my ecstasy. And then suddenly I hear a cracking sound. Katak. But I say, no, no. Ecstasy should not stop. And suppose, imagine my body for that moment has been designed to be not responding to pain. I can't feel pain. Suppose, imagine that some special parameters have been changed. You won't feel pain at all. So, there is a fracture. The bone has broken. But because I'm not feeling pain, I continue dancing. And suddenly I see one object moving on the side. Looks familiar. Kya hai ye? Achha, mera pair hi hai wo. So you go on dancing and dancing and dancing to the extent where the leg separates. The foot separates. Is it not? So now my question is, pain is good or not? How many say pain is good? The numbers have increased now. So in that sense, there is a purpose for that pain. The pain is there so that we know there is something wrong. Pain is an indicator of something faulty. Pain is an indicator that you need to correct. Therefore, if you are experiencing pain in life, suffering in life, which I'm sure most of us here are going through, introspect and understand. If that experience is there, it indicates my life is going wrong somewhere. I am in a diseased condition. Symptom of disease is pain. Physical disease, physical pain. Mental pain means mental disease. So we are experiencing disease of the mind. And therefore, we need to change. We need to correct. And this is a very important principle. Therefore, when you see the world, see life and see pain, see suffering, that should provoke you to think, what is the purpose? Why am I going through this suffering condition? How can I overcome this suffering? Like our Radhavalla Prabhu, who is a very world famous international chef, and he used to come to our temple when he was in IIT. So he would stand in the prasadam line and he would said he would be so hungry and desperate for eating prasad that he would take the prasadam plate and his eyes would be like focused on what's falling on the plate. He says, I don't remember who was serving prasad. I never looked up to see who are the people serving. Never remember seeing any devotees as such in the prasadam counter. But the only time I would look up was when something would not fall on the plate according to expectation. So, halwa is there, little halwa falls out. Who is that? Who's not giving me? Who's holding back? So, as long as things keep falling in our plate of life according to our expectation, we don't feel any need to turn to any other source. We don't look up. We are looking down. Ah, I know this. I got this. I got this. I got this. We are busy. We are busy enjoying life. As soon as something is held back, immediately we look up and we say, there must be some power who's controlling. Otherwise, after using all my intelligence, all my expertise, all my skills, still there is something wanting and I couldn't get things according to my expectation. Could be there is a higher power. And that forces you to take notice. Oh, that is Radha Vallabh. So now he is right there at the altar. Shri Srinatha Gopinath Ji Ki. Shri Gauranitai Ki. Srinath Ji Ki. I go Premanande. So like that, this is an understanding of purpose. So therefore, philosophy consists of four things. First aspect of philosophy is logic. Second aspect is epistemology. That to understand how the knowledge acquiring processes work. Third is aesthetics. Understanding beauty, grace, ethics, things like that. And fourth aspect of philosophy is theology. And theology is the background, the forces behind, the purpose and stuff like that. Theology. So modern science has become totally mechanistic and it began as a part of philosophical exercise, but it has cut out all the other processes, you know. Now it has become stuck with empiricism like that. Okay.
Viveks, thank you very much, Gaurang Prabhu, for giving us such a wonderful seminar. It was really an eye-